Hamas says that U.S. administration is a full partner in Israel's genocide and massacres in Gaza by providing cover for the regime's crimes. A human rights organization says the people of Gaza face an increased risk of infections and epidemics due to the collapse of the health system amid Israel's genocidal war. And U.S. police arrest dozens of pro-Palestine students at Yale University as protests against Israeli genocide in Gaza gain momentum across American campuses. Our top story, Hamas says that Israel does not hesitate to commit most heinous atrocities against the civilians of Gaza, with the U.S. administration providing it with criminal cover. In a statement, the Palestinian resistance movement said U.S. is a full partner in Israel's genocide. Hamas added that the discovery of mass graves inside of Al-Nasser Hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunis confirms that Palestinians are facing a fascist enemy thirsty for blood and murder. Civil service workers in Gaza recovered the bodies of nearly 300 Palestinians in several mass graves in Al-Nasser's courtyard, most of them women, children, and the elderly. The mass graves were created when Israeli forces besieged the facility last month, and some of those executed were blindfolded and handcuffed. A Geneva-based human rights organization warns civilians in Gaza are facing an unprecedented health and environmental catastrophe amid Israel's ongoing campaign of genocide. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor said the risk of infectious diseases and epidemics has greatly increased across Gaza due to water contamination, overcrowding, scarcity of medicine, and collapse of the health system. It added that children, especially newborns, the elderly, and people with chronic health problems are most affected by the worsening health catastrophe in Gaza. Euromed said most of the people in Gaza are forced to drink polluted water, which has caused spread of diseases such as cholera, diarrhea, dysentery, and hepatitis. The Israeli army has conducted more attacks on the occupied West Bank in the past day, arresting more Palestinians. Regime forces also blocked entrances to Al-Khalil, Tubas, and some other cities, inspecting passing vehicles. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters have wounded two Israeli soldiers in a car-ramming attack, and our correspondent in Ramallah has your details.
The Israeli forces arrested the two Palestinians. Both of them were 18-year-old Mu'taz Ghulmi and Hatem Qawasmi, and they are both from the city of Al-Khalil. After detaining those young Palestinians, Mu'taz Ghulmi and Hatem Qawasmi, the Israeli forces stormed the city of Al-Khalil. They destroyed the properties of the family of Al-Qawasmi inside Al-Khalil, and then they raided the Karantina area where the home of the young Palestinian Ghulmi, and they arrested his two brothers. Family members were also detained from the both families, from Ghulmi and Al-Qawasmi, the families of those two Palestinians, and they were taken for interrogation. This comes, as you have said, after Israeli military raids to a number of Palestinian areas earlier across the occupied West Bank, when the troops stormed Qalqilia, stormed Tubas, and the soldiers destroyed vehicles there. Clashes have taken place, exchange of fire between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces, and a number of Palestinians had been detained. According to the Palestinian Commission of Prisoners Affairs and the Prisoners Society, the Israelis detained 8,425 Palestinians since the 7th of October, as every day between a dozen to 40 Palestinians are being arrested by the Israeli forces across the occupied West Bank.
An independent review says Israel has yet to provide any evidence for its terrorism allegations against UNRWA employees. The report said the UN Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees had regularly supplied Israel with lists of its employees for vetting. However, it said that Tel Aviv had not informed the agency of any concerns related to any of its staff since 2011. Review stressed UNRWA remains irreplaceable and indispensable to Palestinians' human and economic development. The independent review was led by former French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna. UN set up the probe group following Israeli allegations in January that 12 UNRWA staff members participated in an anti-Israel operation carried out by Hamas on October 7th. The accusations led major donors to cut their funding to the agency. Exchange of fire between Hezbollah resistance movement and the Israeli army continues along the southern Lebanese border. Reports have emerged of activation of Israel's Iron Dome system in several settlements. Movement said on Monday it targeted the headquarters of the 3rd Infantry Brigade situated at the Israeli Ain Zaytin base in the occupied Safad area using dozens of Grad rockets. And earlier down an advanced Israeli Hermes 450 drone. Our Beirut correspondent, Maddie Amsal, they joined us earlier with your details.
We know that the sirens are sounding in at least 12 Israeli settlements all across the Galilee region. This is also in addition to the sounds of explosions in those skies of over several of the settlements like Kiryat Shmona, Kfar Blum, Hanita, and Ishyad Yashuf, Shlomi, as well as Edmit. Those sounds of explosions, as we know, are the sounds of the fact that the Iron Dome system had been activated. But Hezbollah has, of course, launched several operations. There was significant launch targeting of the espionage devices in the border area that is facing the town of Al-Wazani. And that is considered, of course, one of the many times when Hezbollah has targeted espionage devices even after they had targeted everything on the border. The Israelis are attempting to plant new devices, and every time a new device is planted, Hezbollah seems to target that. Hezbollah has also targeted groups of soldiers. You mentioned that also in the Western Galilee part. We have one instance which was in the vicinity of the Hanita post, and another group of soldiers that were deployed surrounding the Al-Dhaira post. And this is, of course, also part of the tactics of Hezbollah, making sure that they target military personnel, not only devices. But the most significant, I think, in the last 24 hours was the fact that Hezbollah has taken down a Hermes 450. That is the fifth Israeli UAV that Hezbollah has taken down. Now Hezbollah has taken this on camera. They have aired footage of the fact that they have taken it down.
In the United States, protests against Israeli genocide in Gaza are gaining steam at university campuses. Police arrested dozens of protesters at Yale University, while students at Columbia are asked to attend classes virtually. At Yale, more than 45 protesters were arrested when police cracked down on a student protest encampment in the campus. Students have been calling for the university to cut its investments in weapons manufacturers. Meanwhile, authorities at Columbia University were forced to cancel in-person classes after students continued to stage their protests. Last week, more than 100 students were arrested after university officials called on New York police to clear a protest encampment. Now, unusual move was condemned by some faculty, but campus protests have also been held throughout other universities across the country. And thousands of Israelis once again hold rallies against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his failure to secure the release of captives in Gaza. Protesters gathered outside his residence. They said they want to exert more pressure on his cabinet to strike a deal with Hamas to bring the captives back. They also marked the religious holiday of Passover, which contains a ritual meal. But instead of having that meal, protesters set fire to a table to show their outrage at Netanyahu. Israeli officials say 129 captives are still in Gaza. Dozens of them have also been killed in regime's airstrikes on the besieged territory. Hamas says it wants a complete ceasefire and withdrawal of all occupation forces from Gaza as part of a ceasefire deal to release the captives. The resistance movement also wants the return of displaced Palestinians back to their homes. President Ibrahim Raisi says Iran and Pakistan have inseparable bonds and are resolved to bolster ties at all levels. The Iranian president is in Pakistan on a three-day visit. Nasir Kazmi has your details out of Islamabad.
In a significant diplomatic milestone, the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi embarked on a three-day official visit to Pakistan, marking the first such visit by any foreign leader following the February 8 elections. Upon his arrival at the Prime Minister's house for a meeting with PM Shahbaz Sharif, the Iranian President was honored with a Guard of Honor by impeccably turned-out contingents of armed forces. The Pakistani Premier Shahbaz Sharif extended a warm welcome to the esteemed guest upon his arrival at the venue of the formal welcome ceremony. During a press conference, the visiting Iranian president emphasized the common ground shared by Islamabad and Tehran on various global issues, such as joint efforts against terrorism and addressing human rights violations in Palestine.
There are several common positions and stances between our two countries. For instance, when it comes to fighting against terrorism, both countries are determined to fight against terrorism, organized crime, narcotics, and different forms and manifestations of insecurity that endanger our two countries and the region. Today, we decided to increase economic, commercial, and cultural relations between Pakistan and Iran, and both Pakistan and Iran have agreed to increase trade volume to $10 billion.
The Pakistani premier said that both Iran and Pakistan are resolute in their commitment to combat terrorism and other forms of insecurity that threaten not only our nations but also the broader region. The Pakistani premier thanked Iran for taking a strong stance against the oppression of Muslims in Gaza.
Security Council ki qarardad.
The resolution of Security Council regarding Palestine is still being flouted today. All Muslim countries should raise their voices unitedly until a complete ceasefire in Gaza.
The visiting Iranian president also met with his Pakistani counterpart Asif Ali Zardari and other top-ranking Pakistani officials. Pakistan and Iran said they will continue to promote their bilateral relations in diverse fields including security, political, economic, trade and culture.
The recent visit by the Iranian president to Pakistan underscores the close and fraternal ties between the two nations. Analysts say that this visit will serve to strengthen bilateral relations and foster greater people-to-people contacts between Islamabad and Tehran. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
And now when Iran retaliated against Israeli regime in Operation True Promise, it did not anticipate it to be so successful, even by the IRGC's own admission. But the positive reaction worldwide, especially from regional countries, increased Iran and its leaders' popularity immensely, as explained next.
After Operation True Promise, combined with Iran's unwavering support for Palestine, Iran's perception in the public domain, especially in the West Asia region, has strengthened. Finally, someone had not only stood up to Israel, but had publicly humiliated it and inflicted physical damage to it. Tehran's Operation True Promise, its retaliatory response to the Israeli regime's recent attack on the Iranian consulate building in Damascus, created new rules in the equation of deterrence and strengthened the resistance axis of trust and levels of Iran's popularity among public opinion of the Arab world. Iran's popularity among the broad sections of the public opinion of the Arab world has increased because the people of Arab countries were angry with their government's inaction. When it came to the issue of Palestine and the Israeli regime, they were desperate for the Israeli regime to be confronted. Well, Iran's response was bold in the shadow of the world's silence regarding Gaza and the genocide taking place. The whole world had watched the Zionist regime murder Palestinians for 200 days. Finally, one country had the guts to inflict damage to the Israeli regime, Iran, and Operation True Promise. Iran had gained new political and security credibility with direct retaliatory attack on Israel. No country had dared to attack Israel in the last 50 years. Now, from now on, not only countries in the region, but countries outside of the region will have new calculations about Iran. Iran's reach in worldwide popularity amongst the Muslim countries had also been elevated due to operation. The people of the region praise Iran for confronting Israel's aggression and have criticized their rulers and governments for supporting Israel, especially ones who have normalized relations with Israel. But it wasn't just Arab countries and their population that had praise for Iran. There was mass support when it came to pro-Palestine activists. They praised Iran for launching drones and missiles at Israel. After all, they had been protesting in solidarity with Palestinians and against Israel for months.
Academic and political analyst Sayed Jalil Hussein says a psychological blow caused by Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel was much greater than the material one.
Iran's retaliation was never it was never about causing immense devastation. Iran never wanted to do that. It was all about deterrence. Now, what has happened is, since 1948, in fact, since 1967, the Zionist regime has enjoyed overwhelming military superiority in the region, whether that is against the combined Arab powers in 1967, 1973, and also during various skirmishes with Iraq and other states. So what has happened is they have always threatened escalation dominance, that whoever threatens us, whoever sort of rejects our occupation of Palestinian territories, they will be punished with a lot of vengeance. And most of those weapons, of course, are supplied from the West, as you just talked about that. But what has happened is, for the first time in its history, there is a country, Islamic Republic of Iran, that has been able to build the capacities that can threaten Israeli regime, the stability of the state, and any important strategic centers of Israel, including the most important air bases like Nevadim and Ramon. So that has been a devastating blow for the Israeli regime. And I think in terms of material blow, it's not that important, but the psychological blow is long-lasting, because deterrence is essentially psychological. If you are able to convince your opponent that you can hit them anytime and you can hit them hard, you have done the trick.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention has issued an active genocide alert over the situation for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians across Palestine, the Lemkin Institute said earlier this month. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "Recently, violence against Palestinians escalated sharply as large groups of Israeli settler mobs launched attacks on at least 17 Palestinian villages following the disappearance of an Israeli teenager. Zionist settlers killed thousands of chickens and dozens of sheep and stole others. They blocked entrances to villages, set Palestinian homes on fire, burnt hundreds of olive trees, injured dozens of Palestinians with live ammunition, and destroyed private Palestinian property, including cars and livestock pens. Zionist settlers were often accompanied and protected by the Israeli regime military. In total, between April 12th and 15th, 7 Palestinians were murdered in the occupied West Bank, including at least 2 children. Palestinian human rights groups Al-Haq, Al-Mizan, and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights recently urged the international community, private actors, and businesses to respond to the widespread violent attacks against Palestinians and their property across the West Bank. Before October 7th, violence in the West Bank was already on pace to eclipse that of any year on record, the Lemkin Institute said, adding, "With Israeli military forces killing roughly 200 Palestinians in the West Bank in the first 9 months of 2023. After the Zionist regime began its campaign of slaughter in the Gaza Strip, violence by Israeli regime settlers and the regime itself against Palestinians reached its peak in the West Bank. This made 2023 the deadliest year in the occupied West Bank since the UN monitoring group OCHA began recording casualties in 2005. The Lemkin Institute said, "Israeli military forces continue a campaign of genocide and unprecedented violence in the West Bank." On April 12th, a 14-year-old Zionist settler went missing near the village of Al-Mughayr near Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Despite no evidence linking the boy's disappearance or death to Palestinians, hundreds of settlers launched their rampage against Palestinian villages and communities in the West Bank on April 12th and 13th. He was found dead the next day near the settlement outpost of Malachi HaShalom, which was constructed on private Palestinian land in 2015. The Israeli regime army labeled it a terrorist attack as soon as he was found dead, igniting violence from settler mobs against Palestinians. Under the watchful eye and protection of the Israeli regime army, some 1,500 to 2,000 settlers, some of whom were armed, stormed the village of Al-Mughayr over 2 days, Palestinian human rights groups said. Jihad Afif Abu Alia, 25, was murdered during these attacks. He was shot in his head while protecting one of the homes targeted by Zionist settlers' attacks. The group said when Jihad was shot, he was among a group of around 25 to 27 Palestinians on the rooftop of a Palestinian home, which was surrounded by around 400 Israeli settlers. Settlers continue to fire at Palestinians as they attempt to evacuate Abu Alia for medical attention, leaving him to bleed for 30 minutes. Zionist settlers completely burnt at least 14 homes and partially burnt 15 others in Al-Mughayr. They also completely destroyed more than a dozen livestock pens and partially burnt 4. Settlers also set fire to around 60 vehicles in the village. Settlers from the Beit El settlement also attacked the nearby village of Beitin on April 13th, where they set fires and vandalized Palestinian property. Palestinian residents of the village tried to confront the settlers to defend their community. The settlers fired live ammunition at them. Among those responding to distress calls was Omar Ahmad Abdul Ghani Hamed, a 17-year-old high school senior and the youngest of his siblings. Recently, a group of Zionist settlers opened fire on Palestinians in the village of Beitin, northeast of Ramallah, killing 17-year-old Omar Ahmad Abdul Ghani Hamed with a bullet to the forehead. He was shot in the head just as he arrived to the scene of the attack. The bullet entered his forehead and exited from the back, according to the Defense for Children International Palestine, which conducts field investigations of the killing of Palestinian children. He was pronounced dead shortly afterward. That same day, Zionist settlers launched violent attacks in Douma, Osra and Sawiya villages south of Nablus in the occupied West Bank. They set fire to 300 olive trees, destroyed livestock sheds and killed 40 sheep, as well as over 10,000 chickens, Palestinian rights groups said. In Douma, hundreds of armed settlers accompanied by Israeli regime troops opened fire on Palestinian residents. The Palestine Red Crescent Society reported that at least five village residents sustained injuries from live ammunition, knife attacks, and physical assaults. The Palestinian human rights groups reported these latest attacks have resulted in the forcible displacement of five families from Douma and another five families from Ghusra, whose homes have been rendered completely uninhabitable due to these acts of arson. Meanwhile, during a military incursion on April 15th into Rafidia, a neighborhood in the eastern part of the city of Nablus, an Israeli troop shot and killed a Palestinian teenager, striking him in the head from a short distance. An Israeli troop inside a heavily armored military vehicle fatally shot 17-year-old Yazan Muhammad Fawzi Shataya in the chest from a distance of 20 to 30 meters in Nablus recently. The Zionist troop opened fire from inside a heavily armored military vehicle at Yazan Muhammad Shataya 17 while he was allegedly throwing stones at the Zionist regime troops along with other Palestinian youths. 1 week before, on April 8, the Zionist regime forces shot and killed a teenage Palestinian girl at Tayasir checkpoint near Tubas, northeast of Nablus. Asma Ahmad Saad Daragme, 17, was allegedly attempting to carry out a stabbing attack when the Zionist regime forces shot her several times at a distance of around 10 meters, and that's according to DCIP. The Zionist regime forces refused to allow Palestinian medics to reach or treat Asma, the human rights group said, leaving her to die. DCIP said Asma laid on the ground at the checkpoint, bleeding heavily, according to eyewitnesses. The Zionist regime forces then confiscated her body. The fabricated regime of Israel has been routinely conducting prolonged military raids in towns, cities, and refugee camps across the West Bank, particularly in the north. The Zionist regime military raids often include highly destructive attacks on infrastructure, with the Zionist regime bulldozers damaging water pipes, roads, and power facilities. The Zionist regime army has also been conducting aerial attacks in the occupied West Bank, a practice it revived from the Second Intifada 2 decades ago. Israeli regime troops have killed at least 435 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including 112 children, since October 7th. Additionally, Israeli settlers have killed at least 10 Palestinians, and another 6 were killed by either Israeli army or settler fire, according to documentation by UN Monitoring Group OCHA. The Zionist regime forces have injured nearly 4,900 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7th.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to attain ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So what a beautiful title we have on today's program, and that is how to attain ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So to kind of, start to tread some of these shallow waters before we get to the deep end of the pool, is that Islamic lifestyle is what will help us to achieve ultimate perfection, right? A lot of times we go to, these, non-religious, or perhaps we can call them secular spiritual gurus and, sadhus and these kind of obscure, spiritual, secular kind of things that we kind of fall into, because we're looking for spirituality. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who take advantage of this desire for spirituality of a human being. And they kind of get in there and they give you these kind of weird prescriptions, and then they ask you for money eventually. And, it's like a Ponzi scheme that people don't really realize what's going on. And it's interesting, when it gets really serious, we have this concept which is called Irfan-e Kadhib. It is translated as this Irfan, the spiritual wayfaring, which is false. It is based upon falsehood, or it is based upon incomplete truth, right? It's based on either one of these, but the consequence and the repercussions are the same, and that is danger and harm. There you go. Danger and harm is what the consequences of this pseudo secular, spiritualism, which is based upon falsehood or half truths. And that's something that we need to really be careful from, because yes, we want to attain ultimate perfection, but it is not done via these means. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about attaining ultimate perfection as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So in the previous segment, we kind of set this fundamental pillar or foundation, which is that if you want to attain ultimate perfection, if you want to attain spirituality, then the way to go is Islamic lifestyle. There is no other substitute for spirituality and for attaining perfection. The only, complete and perfect and comprehensive, remedy or solution is Islamic lifestyle, and that too of the pure Muhammadan Islam, the Islamic lifestyle of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, and the infallible and immaculate Imams alayhim assalam. This is the Islamic lifestyle which will lead to ultimate perfection. So that's the second fundamental pillar. Don't go out there into this obscure trying to gain spirituality. You're just going to lose yourself, and you're going to do your spirit and your soul some serious damage. It's not worth it. Don't waste your time. So go to the Islamic lifestyle. And of course, the Islamic lifestyle is not something that is, you know, incredibly difficult, right? Allah says in the Holy Quran that we have made religion easy for you. The purpose and the goal and the end result of ultimate perfection is nearness to Allah. As we say in all of our actions, Qurbatan ilallah. I seek nearness to Allah. That nearness is ultimate perfection, and it is attained via very simple but profound things, such as fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, going to the Hajj, Zakat, Khums, right? The five daily prayers, the wajib prayers, recitation of the Holy Quran, the mustahabbat and the recommended things, and moral and ethical virtues. That is what's going to help you attain ultimate perfection as a part of your Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parsetoday.ir/en.
In the limelight.
The U.S. continues to provide full support for the Zionist regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The events of early April seem to bear out the first line of T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, that April is the cruelest month. On April 10th, on Eid al-Fitr, the celebratory end of Ramadan, the Zionist regime killed three sons and four grandchildren of Hamas political bureau leader Ismail Haniyeh in an airstrike on Gaza's Ashati camp. This adds yet more killings to the already staggering total, with Haniyeh himself having lost 60 family members to the Zionist regime's attacks. 3 days earlier, a Palestinian citizen of the occupied territories, Walid Daqa, after 38 years of imprisonment, died from a lack of adequate medical care for bone marrow cancer. According to his lawyer, Daqa had recently been subjected to torture and beatings. A writer and revolutionary thinker, Daqa formulated the concept of parallel time, linking the larger prison of occupied Palestine to smaller prisons like those he found himself in for close to four decades. As Mondobe's managing editor, Faris Riaz-Kam, wrote in a brilliant tribute, Daqa was one of the few legitimate inheritors of Ghassan Kanafani's legacy. Kanafani, who likely needs no introduction, was born in Accra in April 1936 and lived through the Nakba as a child. He was assassinated in Beirut in 1972 along with Lamis Nijem, his 17-year-old niece. In the pre-drone era of Israeli assassinations of Palestinian cultural and political figures, this was carried out with a car bomb. The title of one of Kanafani's greatest stories, He Was a Child That Day, says it all. In a 1970 interview with Australian journalist Richard Carlton, Kanafani, a prominent member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, was asked, "Why won't your organization engage in peace talks with the Israelis?" Kanafani stared silently down in front of him before responding, "You don't mean exactly peace talks. You mean capitulation, surrendering." Carlton continued, "Why not just talk?" Kanafani asked, "Talk to whom?" To which Carlton said, "Talk to the Israeli leaders." Kanafani replied, "That's a kind of conversation between the sword and the neck." Remarkably, as if on cue, at a crucial point in negotiations between Hamas and the Zionist regime, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had this to say on April 9th, "We would not be where we are had they not chosen to engage in one of the most horrific acts of brutality and terrorism on October 7th, and had they then, having done that, not refuse these many, many months to get out of the way of civilians, to stop hiding behind them, to put down their arms, to release the hostages, to surrender." While the needle doesn't seem to have moved among the Western political alliance led by the US, the mask has been off for a long time in most of the rest of the world, and it is increasingly coming off among the actual subjects of these Western regimes, whose anger and disgust mounts daily. Indications of this are everywhere, from continuing protest to conservative commentator Tucker Carlson's recent interview with Palestinian pastor Munter Isaac, in which the pair excoriated U.S. congressional and evangelical support for the Zionist regime, a pillar of U.S.-Israel relations and funding. The dizzying events of the past few weeks tell us much about where things stand in the relentless mix of differently scaled atrocities and psychological warfare carried out by state actors and their willing accomplices in the media, academia, and professional associations. The official outrage, both genuine and feigned, over the targeted killing of seven World Central Kitchen Aid workers has not been even remotely matched when it comes to the more than 34,000 Palestinian casualties of this genocidal slaughter. While the Zionist regime forces systematically target the Palestinian reporters, exposing their crimes, mainstream Western journalism appears to have accepted the rules of engagement laid out by those in power. Do not probe too deeply nor connect too many dots. In the meantime, we are exposed to a continually escalating news cycle, with the stories relentlessly pumped out at the expense of clarity and coherence. As journalist Pepe Escobar so scathingly put it regarding the attack on the aid workers, quote, "The logic behind the deliberate three-tap strike on the clearly signed humanitarian convoy of famine-alleviating workers in Gaza was to eviscerate from the news an even more horrendous episode, the genocide within a genocide of Ashifa Hospital," unquote. Escobar went on to write of the Zionist regime's attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus, quote, "This was a missile attack on a diplomatic mission enjoying immunity on the territory of a third country against which Israel is not at war. Translation, an act of terror against two sovereign states, Syria and Iran," unquote. This whole series of events, in addition to the Israeli-US policy of using starvation as a tool of war, while covering up the ongoing genocide, aims to eliminate the possibility of accepting Hamas, which is considered a terrorist organization in the UK and other Western regimes, as a credible negotiating partner. As Palestinian human rights attorney Diana Bato put it after the assassination of Haniyeh's family members, negotiations, Israeli style, between obligatory crocodile tears and theatrical anger, the U.S. regime continues to arm and provide full support for the Zionist regime's genocide, while pleading for the child-killing regime of Israel to call a ceasefire and allow food into Gaza through more crossings, all while holding veto power at the UN Security Council.
Welcome to the Israel Watch, which has been monitoring recent developments, including the repercussions of the Iranian attack on the entity and the Israeli response, as well as the failure of the aggression on Gaza to undermine the resistance and break the steadfastness of Gazans, in addition to the state of anxiety resulting from the situation the entity faces. I'd like to go ahead and welcome our guest today, Dr. Ahmed Ashabi, a political analyst, to our show today. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Let's begin today with the Hebrew media, which has focused on the allegations of a Zionist response to the Iranian attack in Isfahan. The enemy's media not only adopted these allegations, but also built on them to warn of a possible Iranian response. Well, Doctor, what is the Zionist objective in promoting these allegations about a response to the Iranian attack in such an unconvincing manner?
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I've been following the news since early in the morning, and we're following different media outlets, and there is no evidence of an attack, an Israeli attack on the Iranian soil. There are some information about the coming from Iran about some small drones that are local, that are minimal. Actually, they don't actually create any damage, and they were there. They're used usually for civilian objectives, not for military objectives, the type of drones. These are the preliminary information that just came out. When it comes to the Israeli media sources, well, there's a lot of talk, but there's no evidence, nothing concrete. So it's just petty talk, and it's absolutely puzzling, because usually when you do such a response, you do it in a spectacular way because you want to give this illusion to the settlers and the Israelis.
Well, actually, Doctor, like you're saying, the word you're using here is illusion. Many people have been trying to find a word to this attack. I do want to ask you, do you think these allegations could be an exit for Netanyahu's government from the response crisis that they have been experiencing ever since the Iranian attack?
Well, obviously, I mean, there were so many prime ministers, presidents of allied countries to the Israeli entity have been advising Israel not to respond, and therefore he wants to keep it at a minimum level. But that seems too minimal, and there is no indication that these planes came from the occupied Palestine in the first place. So, I mean, that will backfire against Netanyahu, because it will create more fears. So settlers and Israelis will have more fear, because they will say, oh, this is the response by our military capacity? It is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, Doctor, actually, it's a great time right now to go ahead and add something that's been buzzing everywhere, where on the other hand, Ben-Gvir saw that the alleged Zionist response to Iran was nothing but a mockery, which raised concerns among the security apparatuses in the entity. Do you believe it was a good idea for Ben-Gvir to comment in the first place?
I think that his comment, yes, it will create damage. They had fear on this television program that he will create damage. Well, the damage has already been done, because, you know, they thought that even if they would, do such, have some news that they attacked Iran, that Iran will react emotionally, or Iran will speed up its response in an emotional and brutal and violent way. Well, they didn't understand how the Iranian system works.
Exactly. He described it as a mockery, and it seems that he became the center of this mockery.
Exactly. And the Iranians do not take things lightly. The Iranians want to actually know all the details about this attack before deciding what to do. And until now, all the information that is available to the Iranians, who have actually, checked out the whole locations there, and who have been, watching any Israeli military move towards Iran. Well, until now, the information is that there is no attack from Israel on Iranian soil. This is, a local thing that was done locally.
Yes.
And it is a repetition of what has been done before, because Iran had been subject to a lot of crimes, that targeted civilian scientists,
exactly.
University
They've
professors.
They've been through exactly a lot, and as a first time of their attack, I believe only one question here. How do you interpret his position as a member of the War Council refusing to attack Iran?
Yes, well, this position and the position we showed a bit earlier with Ben-Gvir, these two and the position of Europeans and Americans, pressuring Israel not to respond, these are all indications of the large schism and divisions between the Israelis, and that's a new feature in the confrontation with the Israeli enemy. That has not happened before in previous wars. For the first time, the Israelis have divisions between them. They have divisions and differences with the Americans and with their European allies.
Actually, that you're mentioning the U.S. European, do you believe that Israel's such a small response was because of the U.S. European pressure?
I think it was a response like that because, Netanyahu said he would respond and that he didn't want to go back on his word.
So he had to do it no matter what.
And he had to do it no matter what. But I think the results will be, I dare to say that they're catastrophic. Because on the Israelis themselves, because
it's such a very
as I
good
said
point
in the
doctor.
Beginning, the settlers and the Israelis will not believe that the Israeli army and the Israeli military has capacity and the power to defend them from another Iranian attack.
Is Eitan Ben-Eliahu actually proposing a retaliation to Iran in Gaza?
Well, that's what he's saying. I think, and that's again a sign of weakness. I mean, they want to go on and expand the genocide. I mean, and we were looking at this equipment that the Israelis have. They have the most advanced technology and equipment, but they just don't know how to use it.
And Biden today mentioned he's going to be sending over more, correct?
Yeah, well, and Ursula von der Leyen said that she wants to develop the actual European capacity in order to confront, the the Iranian danger. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, Iran had responded legitimately to an attack that it was subject to on its embassy in Damascus. It did
just
it.
One of the attacks, I mean, not to mention the previous
but
ones.
But Iran responded in a way that was in line with international law. It targeted military facilities. It gave an early warning, and it was a totally legitimate and proportionate attack. And I think this is outstanding because this shows this political and diplomatic maturity by the Islamic Republic in Iran, and for the first time it showed this weakness, this unprecedented weakness of the Israeli entity,
that finally,
and the unprecedented divisions within the Israeli, in the Israeli community and,
exactly.
and political
which actually
community.
Doctor, like you're mentioning, was something the whole world saw this time. Why do you believe, as we have seen repetitively, why does Israeli army lie and conceal the real losses of the previous Iranian attack?
Well, they wanted to say that, you know, the Iranian attack was insignificant, and that was their objective. And now they're faced with the truth. They have, again, this contributes to more schisms and more differences, and they are completely confused. I mean, they don't know how to deal with this. Although there's a one important fact that they know and everybody knows, is that Iran spent a few million dollars on this attack. I mean, these were first generation, you know, drones and planes and cruise missiles. They were not like advanced, the most advanced.
Locally made.
They were locally made, and of course, and the more advanced are also locally made. But these were the old ones, the old models. And that was what Iran spent, and spent a few million dollars, whereas the Israelis spent, according to them, more than $1.35 billion to counter
wow.
that attack. And in addition to that, what is more valuable that Iran gained, it's Iran actually knows now how the Israelis and what capacity
and
they have.
And as we know, this is a new generation of warfare.
Yes, and they know, the Iranian intelligence and army now know how the Israelis would respond if another attack will occur. So the next attack, and we hope it will never happen, because we hope the Israelis will leave Palestine and give back the land to those who actually own it. But if there will be an upcoming attack, then the Israelis will feel it, and this time they will feel it really hard.
Well, Doctor, what is your opinion on some Zionist commentators linking Israel's response to the Iranian attack with the issue of prisoners and the situation in Gaza?
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous. This lady, this person on the screen doesn't actually understand that they will never get the hostages back if they don't respond to the demands of Hamas and the Islamic Jihad. And that is the, these are the instructions of the supreme leader in Iran. It is Hamas and Jihad. It is Yahya Sinwar and Abu Khalid al-Dayf and the leadership of Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and the resistance in the field who are fighting a heroic, unprecedented. This is like Greek mythology. Yahya Sinwar and Abu Khalid al-Dayf are fighting with these men from underground for 200 days, whereas the most advanced technology ever in history is attacking them on a non-stop basis. Not only the Israeli army, the US army, the French army, the British, and the most advanced technology they threw on these people in 360 square kilometers, 85,000 tons of metal and steel, and they've been able to actually continue to resist. These people don't know what they're talking about. They are confronting some of the fiercest fighters ever. And I'm not exaggerating.
Definitely
I'm giving
yes.
scientific information
and
in the history of civilization.
Exactly. And this is why these names will go down in history.
Of course, definitely.
Yes. Moving now to the southern Lebanese front opened by Hezbollah in support of Gaza and the resistance and its people, where the strikes received by the occupying army have become more painful. We have noticed an increase in the frequency of the painful qualitative operations as happened at the military site, as we know, of Aramsha. How do you respond to what is happening?
Well, you know, this video and these statements and the previous video, they're talking about restoring the power of Israel and the capacity of Israel to deter its enemies or to deter us. This is absolutely ridiculous. They've been doing this for 200 days. They've been doing this for 75 years, trying to deter the resistance and trying to think that there is a violent solution by them scaring their neighbors, you know, instilling fear and terror. and terrorizing the whole region. That's how Israel can be a safe place, by terrorizing others. That's what they're saying. What is it that the general said in the previous video? He said that we must work on restoring deterrence because it's not working anymore, and Iran dared to do what it wouldn't have dared to do before, and the Palestinians did on October 7 what they wouldn't have dared to do before, and the resistance in northern occupied Palestine is doing what it never dared to do before. Well, I have news that this is going to continue. And this Israeli criminal entity doing a genocide, and the genocide itself is never, ever going to be considered